Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach. And I didn't say that with any great enthusiasm.
Second hour of The Personal Wealth Coach.
And we are here on this June 27th, a Saturday. I hope it's a Saturday. In the year of our Lord, 2015. And the telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. And we actually have a call on 773-1400.
We do. And I'm going to put you on the air. Hopefully you're listening to the radio because you may not be able to hear me on the phone. So, caller, you're on the air. With
the radio?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello, my name is Scott. Hi there. How you doing?
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, I listen to your guys' radio talk show, on Saturdays. I don't have a TV or internet, so you guys are good entertainment on a Saturday. So I want to thank you very much.
We're very, very sorry that you have only us to entertain you during your Saturday morning.
Well, it's a good way of saving a few bucks.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, I wanted to just maybe comment, maybe get your guys' opinions and such. 31 years old. New to Texas, been here for about a year, originally from California, so I wanted to kind of mention kind of like a millennial viewpoint of, the way we are living and society and such like that, and trying to get ahead in the American dream. You talked about the American dream earlier, and I kind of see that the American dream is slipping away as a young man,
Really?
It's kind of the way I feel, at least. I don't get a chance to, I went out, try to find a home loan and get a good job. I had a job in Houston and a job here and a job in California. And, I have to kind of find myself, kind of living on the road just in case that, that this job doesn't work out. I got to pick up my stuff and move on. So the idea of having a career or a job for 30 years,
Let me say something about that. The idea of having a 30-year career is nothing to do with the American dream.
No.
And that's a myth. There was a very short period of time.
Starting around the 70s.
Yeah, 50s through the 70s, following World War II, when a relatively long career was something in a fixed retirement that was given to people by a company, was something that a small percentage of Americans had. But here's what happened there. Television came into vogue during that period. And in the family sitcoms, or I don't know what they were, the Donna Reed Show, I'm not sure, the Ozzie and Harriet, they created a mythology around a typical American family. And to give you some idea how absurd that was, in the Donna Reed Show, her husband was a doctor who wore a suit and who walked in the door at 5 p.m. each day. He walked in the door. She was wearing pearls and high heels with an apron over her very nice dress, having just fixed dinner.
Yeah.
And they had two children. In other words, it was a mythological ideal that just really didn't happen in the real world. People did get laid off, and people did change careers. And the faster technology changes, two things happen when technology changes really, really fast. One, opportunity is big for you. Number two, you have to move around to chase it.
Let me hit something here, because what you just said is perfect.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute. He is my son, and he just said I'm perfect. Okay. Got it. We have this on tape.
This is – okay, I'm going to go back in time here to 1774.
Ooh.
This is before the Declaration of Independence. Okay.
We just went back in time.
The royal governor of Virginia – royal governor.
This the royal.
The royal
yes,
governor
right,
of
right.
Virginia said – the Americans forever imagined the lands further off are still better than those upon which they are already settled. He's talking about frontiers. He added that if they attained paradise, they would move on if they heard of a better place further west.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. This is the concept of the American dream, that you can better yourself by effort.
Yeah, but he had something different here now.
Right. Now,
the caller had something different.
I recognize that.
He moved east.
Yeah, you moved east. What's important to recognize here is that the American dream is something that has morphed and changed over the years, for the last several hundred years. If you think about the American dream and what it was in the 1700s, it was get your axe and go cut down some trees so that you could have a house and some chickens.
That's right.
And it became
pigs.
It's right now what it is educate yourself in something that you can create an enterprise out of.
Mm-hmm.
If we think of the American dream as the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, which is go find a corporation and work for it, that's not the American dream at all. That's some kind of European substitute of the American dream. The American dream is innovation. It's creating something that didn't exist before, and that's very much alive. People talk about that, but there are several things that are important here. People that are born to the lowest economic group, the lowest socioeconomic group, are very likely to stay there for the rest of their lives. But that's
unless they do something about it.
Unless they do something about it. But that hasn't changed at any point in the history of the United States. It's still a much higher percentage of those very poor people that become greatly successful in the United States than anywhere else
in
the world.
Right. We have much better upward mobility. The other thing,
it's not easy, though. That's the thing. If it were easy, it wouldn't be a dream.
Now you have a car, right?
I do.
And you have an apartment or something?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you have air conditioning?
Do you have air conditioning?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me say, I don't know how old you are, but if you're millennial, you're not really very old. Probably 20s?
I'm 31.
Okay. 31. Okay.
1983.
Well, I suspect you're living better than I did at 31. And what I've found is that when I was growing up, for example, air conditioning was something that they had at the movie theater. And so we went there once a week when we could afford the 15 cents.
This is the good old days. The good old days were not so good or old.
My dad tells me about the good old days.
Well, they're not so good. If you're
and the point is that
give me three features and a cartoon.
I lived as a kid in what we thought was a very nice house for the area. It had an attic fan. So that at night, if you laid in front of the windows and you opened the windows and you had these screens, there would be a breeze that came across your body when it was 91 degrees as the sun went down. And we thought that was really good. And we had a gas, which is really good, by the way. We had a natural gas stove in the middle of sitting against the wall in the living room with ceramic things on the back of it that would glow when you turned the gas on, and we would all stand around that. And we normally wore our coats inside in the wintertime because it was cold. Mm-hmm. And we were living very distinctly a middle class, at least in the South, a comfortable middle class life. We had one car for the whole family. Now, turn around and look today. And I remember when we got the television, it was black and white.
So many more people feel like they have rights, you know, to air conditioning or rights to water, or you know, I have a right to, because our comfort of living has gone up and up and up.
But what I'm saying is, when people say the American dream is over and I can't quite get there, I think what you mean by that, and I don't know you specifically, but when I've heard that, it is my parents worked for 30 years, and they had a standard of living, and I'm in my late 20s or early 30s, and I haven't achieved that yet. Therefore, the American dream is not available to me.
And Ed, this is something that happens every generation, and you can find it in the headlines, every generation. I'm an Xer. Old Baldy across from here is a baby boomer. But every generation, there's headlines that say the American dream has failed, that this generation will never achieve what the last generation did. In fact, Carter said that.
And he said it with a much nicer accent. Yes. This generation will never achieve.
Right. part of the dream here is the work. And that's the part that people miss. It isn't the American dream isn't that you will show up and someone will give you a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
It is that you will innovate something new and you will be able to reap the benefits of your own innovation. You'll get to keep at least a big chunk of what you have produced. And that's what we stand for in America. Now, I can definitely understand that it's not easy. It's not easy ever
It's not easy being green.
It's not, well, as Kermit would say. But as I said before, the richest people in the United States, some of them are millennials. If you look at Mark Zuckerberg, some of that was luck, but a lot of it was skill and hard work. And he's still lucking out. If you look at Elon Musk, some of that was luck. A lot of it was skill and hard work. It's true, no matter when you look in history, that each generation supports examples of true and amazing success. And if you go to other places in the world, what you find is that each generation has examples of people that were born to wealth and power and maintained it. We cultivate the ability to reach for better than what we are. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I would say that would be the biggest danger to the American dream is the attitude that the American dream doesn't exist anymore. The idea that we aren't going to be able to attain it.
You have to constantly fight for it. You know, if you want it, you got to go out and get it.
That's right.
Well, that is, that's the point. You just define the dream. See, that's the point. You can get it. That's the issue is, in the United States, you can move up. If you, let's say, you're in Germany, which is one of the more productive.
We love Germany. We spent 3 years there.
Economies.
The only country that's supporting the whole euro right now.
Yeah,
right.
European Union.
Let's say you're in a town and you have a small business, or you want to move to a different town and open a small business.
Good luck with that.
You have to have permission from the town you're in to leave, and permission from the town you're going to open the business there. You also have to have permissions from if it's two different states or your same state, and you have to have permission from the federal government, because they look at the number. Let's say you want to open a butcher shop.
Oh, that's too much competition. Butcher shops there.
We've already got butcher shops. You can't open one. This is true around the world outside of the United States. And in the United States, we have far more freedom, far more prosperity.
In business.
Well, just in general.
Define freedom, because we do have to put our babies in car seats. And in Thailand, they don't require you to put your baby in car seats. So freedom is different. And I bring that up because I know someone from Thailand, and she was shocked. She said she came to the land of freedom, and she is required by law
not to murder
fine
her baby
in jail time. Well,
yeah, to have a rear-facing car seat needs to be in the back.
Exactly.
And, you know, need a, air conditioning for the child. And,
exactly. How do you
define it? If you don't do any of this, then you're going to go to jail.
Right. How do you define freedom? To her, that was not the definition of freedom. Mm. To me, the definition of freedom is being able to innovate and then be able to reap the rewards of the innovation. To her, the definition of freedom was to be able to do whatever you wanted. There's very difference there.
Yeah,
there's a lot of difference.
But if you talk about, let's talk about economic freedom.
Right. That's where we're focusing.
The United States has more economic freedom than any nation on the planet.
Any successful nation, we should say.
Third
world nations that will allow you to do whatever you want if you have enough money.
But they allow you, it's against the law, but they'll just let you do it.
They'll let you do it. Go right ahead.
Yeah, but this is one of those things that, and I had a discussion with online with Lynn Woolley about this the other day. I am an optimist about the United States of America, and I think we get better with each generation. And the one thing that I've seen that the millennials and the old farts in the boomer generation like me agree on is the millennials have no hope of doing anything. Now, you have completely different views on this. You said because we don't have the opportunity, but the old conservatives are saying because you're lazy.
I was going to say that every generation has this view that the American dream is dead, and the generation just before it thinks that this new generation is the worst one that's ever existed on the planet.
I think that we are going to go through, I'll just tell you, 15 years of boom followed by a bust, which your generation gets to fix, by the way.
Yes.
And Jake's generation causes.
Yeah, it'll be great.
But the point is, we go through these booms and busts, and short term, it always appears that everything is falling apart. But long term, and this is where investment works, long term, we get better with each generation. We do a better job with each generation. We have more economic freedom with each generation. We have more opportunity with each generation. And I realize that any of the conservative Tea Party-oriented people who are listening to me are gnashing their teeth, and if they have any hair, they're pulling it out right now. But that's just the truth.
Goldman Sachs just put out a poll about millennials.
Really?
And they said this is you're aged between 18 and 34 this year.
Right.
Next year, it's going to be 19 to 35. So it's a moving generation.
What follows? What is below 18? What are they calling them?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay. I think they're still lumping us all together right now.
Okay, kids. Yeah,
they're calling them kids.
I'll say this, that, you know, for me in 1983, I feel like I was the last generation that got to play outside that really got to enjoy, all the kind of times of the old culture before technology really took off, and now everyone's indoors playing video games and blah, blah, blah.
Everybody says that, though.
I remember, TV shows like Sanford and Sons and Three's Company. I remember all that stuff. You'd ask that to a 20-year-old, and they're not going to know what that is.
But everybody says that as well, though.
Yeah,
Knowing the old and seeing the new.
Jake was doing something, talking about something.
Yes.
Go ahead, Jake.
18% of the millennial generation believe that the stock market is the best way to save for the future.
Only 18.
And not only that, 43% said that they would not spend more than an hour getting guidance on investment ever in their life. And the concept there is the same. People were talking about this with the Xers when we were the same age, though.
Mm.
It is something that has more to do with the age of the generation than the aspects of the generation.
Right.
If you read about, it's almost like astrology. If you read about the characteristics of the millennial generation right now, you'll find they say things like they're more interested in technology. They are less interested in face-to-face communication. They're less likely to communicate with their parents on big decisions. And if you go back 20 years and read what they're saying about Generation X, you'll find exactly the same things. The technology was different. So what you said, the last generation before technology took off, they've been saying that since the horse and carriage, since the buggy. That this new generation is only concerned about technology. They don't have values based on whatever fill-in-the-blank thing, as if they actually had those values at that age. That every older generation thinks that they were smarter at a younger age than they actually were.
There's a song in a musical, Broadway musical, called Bye Bye Birdie. Have you ever heard of that song?
Yeah.
Have you heard of the it was actually about Elvis, only they called him Birdie.
I remember seeing the movie.
And, there's a song in there that goes...
you don't have to sing it. Please don't sing it.
What's the matter with kids today? And it's a bunch of teenagers singing, and this is teenagers from the 1950s, singing about how out of touch the younger generation is.
Every generation is out of touch until they get into touch.
Meaning the ones younger than they are.
Right. So that, just keep that in mind. We're not reinventing the wheel here. You and the millennial generation have been through something that the Xers didn't go through. You went through the Great Recession. You went through something that imprinted on your minds some very fundamental truths about debt and about freedom and about opportunity. Opportunity isn't to be wasted, and debt is not a good thing. The fact that you are listening to a financial radio program on a Saturday morning because you don't have internet.
A couple of bucks.
Exactly. That tells me that the American dream is not dead.
Yeah, that and the fact that the deer population will rise.
The deer population?
Yes, he's going to save some bucks.
Oh, yeah. The bucks produce fawns.
Yeah, that's why the deer are running loose and eating up all the rose bushes in suburbia today.
Sir.
It's because people are trying to save some bucks.
I do want to ask one more question.
Okay.
I'm from California. I'm from Northern California, where all the wonderful Napa Valley wines come from. Beautiful country. I miss it.
And also a lot of good grass, I understand.
Then I moved down to Houston for a job, and I loved it there, but it wasn't my little
spot. You loved it in Houston?
In Houston, yes.
Okay.
And then I came here to Temple, Texas, and it grew upon me. You know, I kind of grew up around small towns, and, this is not a small town. It's a small little city. And I see really, really good potential in this little part of Texas, and I really like it here. But being a Californian and looking around at Texas, I would really like to, build a little spot here in Texas, in Temple, Texas. And I just wanted to get your opinion, what's your thoughts, what I can do. I'd like to make Temple my home. I don't get a chance to right now to have a home loan or, this or that. you know, I would like to start my own business eventually, and I'm looking at, I'd like to find a, you know, a, what's it called, a business loan, you know, how to process going through that.
You're approaching it.
I think what I'm getting to, and I wanted to get your opinion on what I can do for Temple, Texas.
First off, you're approaching it from a backwards point of view. The idea of getting a loan to start a business.
Most people won't give you a loan until you've been in business for 6 months.
So what you need, save your money. In other words, and I'll tell you exactly what to do. Sit down and write out what you want, what kind of business you would like to have and how it could be profitable. And you're going to find you don't know a lot, and sleep on it, and then write it down again, and then sleep on it and write it down again until you get some idea what you want to do that you can be passionate about, that you can make a living doing. And if you can't figure that out, you don't start a business, by the way.
No, the business starts you.
You find something that you want to do, and you're willing to sacrifice working ridiculous hours for below minimum wages for years to make successful. You will struggle with it, you'll fight with it, but if it's not a passion, just go get your W-2 at a corporation someplace,
yeah,
because it is going to be, let me tell you, I started our business, I say our business because Jake and I are partners now, but I started this thing 33 years ago, and I started it out of desperation. And I found something that I was passionate about, and I thought I could do better than anybody I knew. And it took me 20 years to get my head above water.
And to actually realize that you could finally do it better than the people that you knew.
Only to slip back beneath the waves again and look up to see bottom. And now here I am. And in about the 30-year point, I can say, this is cool. But it took 30, and I'm going to tell you, if you talk to anybody who started a business from zero that they were passionate about, it's not at all unusual for them to put 30 years into it, look around, and realize they finally achieved success. Just at the time that the people who are working for Dell or someplace like that are retiring.
Yeah, and if you think just for a minute about how really successful companies get started, they don't go out and get a loan. They don't go to venture capitalists and say, I need $3 million to fund this great idea.
Those, I know somebody who would disagree with you.
I agree. If you look at the big companies, you mentioned Dell. Michael Dell was at college. He built himself a computer.
And then he started building the computers for the other people in his dorm.
Right. His dorm mate said, hey, I'd like a computer. You did it a lot cheaper, and you gave yourself exactly what you wanted. So he ordered the parts and put it together. And then he hired that same dorm mate to do it for the next dorm mate.
Let me give you an example this right now.
Right.
Yes.
I have a house in Salado that needs work done on it. I can't find anybody to do the work. Would I be willing if, and I think, you know, because a lot of the cheap labor has disappeared. You know, unemployment in Texas is down to effectively zero. It's a 4% rate, but that means that's full employment. There aren't unemployed people running around who are willing to work on my house. The illegal aliens have largely vanished from the economy locally. And as a result, I and other people are having trouble finding somebody who's willing to go out in the heat and do repair work and handyman work on houses. There's a tremendous opportunity there. Is it comfortable? Is it air conditioned? Does it provide benefits? You start down the list of all the things it doesn't do, and you realize, and if I were going to, now I am not a maintenance man on a house, but I'm going to tell you what, if somebody showed up at my house that said, look, I can provide maintenance on your house.
Subscription level maintenance.
On a subscription level. You can call on me and you can be confident that if something breaks, I don't care what it is, I will either fix it or find somebody to fix it.
Kind of like the management folks at rental places,
mm-hmm.
only for owners.
Right. And if I had to start a business from zero today and I was looking for an excellent opportunity, I'd start right there.
But you're going to have to find one that fits your passion with
and
the things
go.
That you love
yeah.
to do.
And then you just find some people, pay them well, have them wear uniforms. In other words, rise above the typical handyman who may or may not show up for work the next day and actually employ them. Now, would that be a big challenge? Sure. Some people wouldn't be willing to pay for it, but other people are. In other words, there are things, what you do is you look around for an unfilled need that you're passionate about filling, and you figure out that you can do it better than other people.
Yeah, next time you say, man, I wish somebody would do this, that may be the thing you need to do.
The problem is, the thing you're passionate about, you'll wind up doing for yourself, and you won't want somebody else to do it. But if you wind up doing things for your friends, this is what Michael Dell did. He started building computers for his friends because he could build them cheaper than IBM could. He'd order all the parts and put them together, and he'd sell them to his friends. And his cultural background, his socioeconomic heritage was of Hebraic descent. Yeah. And his parents were of Hebraic descent, and they had no problem with charging people more money than it cost them to do something.
Which is amazing. That's how profit is made.
Yes.
It's pretty amazing there.
Good free enterprise tradition. So what he did is he marked up what it cost him to build a computer by 20%.
And he started making some
fairly good money on that.
And pretty
soon he started employing other people in the dormitory, and they had his dorm room turned into a factory.
And then he had to leave because he wasn't showing up for class, and he was using his dorm as a business. So he started a computer company.
And unemployment was relatively high in Austin at the time, and activity was down, and there was an empty warehouse in East Austin. So he leased the empty warehouse, hired a bunch of college students from UT, and started building computers. He buy an IBM. I actually saw this happen and met him at the time. He would buy a stripped-down IBM PC. That's memory was a tape drive. And when I say a tape drive, I'm talking about like a recording, like you talk into tape drive. He'd put a hard drive in it. He would buy a monitor, a green print show up, black and white, only it was green and white monitor. And he'd put all this together and sell it. Initially, he went with a 40% markup and was still selling it cheaper than IBM was selling an IBM computer with the same qualities. So
it's just a matter of finding the thing that you're capable of doing that other people would pay you to do, and then hire other people and train them to do it, and then you have a business.
And that's it. And the issue is you don't go out and get a loan and become a slave to the banker. You earn the money. You save your money so that you can afford to do all this without getting paid for a while. And you put your money into this business, and if you lose it, you lose it, and you pick up and start all over again. By the way, one of the interesting things about starting a business, you will go broke at least 5 times.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that in the United States, this is another piece of the American dream. It's so fundamental to who we are that it is almost unremarked upon. If you, caller, had two people that are in the room with you, they're both billionaires. That's pretty cool to begin with. You're in the room with two billionaires. One of them inherited every dollar he has. The other one went bankrupt 3 times and recovered and is now a successful billionaire.
And he's running for president.
Yeah, well, not that one. But who do you respect more?
The guy that earned it.
Right.
Yeah. That worked for it.
But everywhere else in the world, if you go to Mexico, if you go even to Canada, if you go to Europe, if you go to Russia, they're going to say the one that inherited it because they've got some kind of a title. They're either a sir or a lord or count or something, because that's the only people that inherits that kind of money. Here, we're kind of like, yeah, that's a trust fund baby. We don't trust them.
Or your name is Murdoch.
Yeah. So keep that in mind when thinking about the American dream. It's so fundamental to who we are. Right now, it's not possible for it to die. The only way it dies in an individual is when they give up on it. Mm-hmm. When they say, I can't do it because the opportunities aren't there. Well, nobody just gives you the opportunity. You got to make it. You got
to
earn it.
You have to earn it.
Yep.
And that's our pep talk for the week.
You know, and there is one thing that you identified, whether you knew it or not, is there's a very large disparity between upper income and lower income people, and it has grown quite a lot. It does that, by the way, when we get quick economic change, the people who have the capital to get things done tend to have their capital grow much faster than the people at the low end of the chain who are working for them. Well, you can either gripe about that, this does happen with these cycles, or you can say, what is it that those people with excess money need done that I can profit from? Because they obviously have excess money and they have a shortage of time.
And if you get that money, that means that you have then acquired the money that means that your capital is more,
right,
which means you will profit more than the people that don't have the capital.
You got it. And eventually you will replace those old rich farts with you.
Yes. With you fart.
But it's a game of last man standing, too. We are relentlessly competitive society. We are free enterprise means you have the right to fail.
And you will use that right regularly. And just don't think of it as a final failure.
And you just, it's just a matter of, somebody asked me, asked me at a conference not very long ago, why am I still doing what I do, which is investment advice, after 33 years, when they were looking at the fact that only a tiny fraction of 1% of the people who started 33 years ago in the early 80s are still doing this. And the answer is, I just was too stupid to quit. And that is really it. You learn a lot as you go along if you want to start a business, and you learn mostly from your mistakes. Jake has a wonderful saying, and it says that a smart man, or a smart person, let me get this correct.
Yeah.
A smart person learns from his or her mistakes. A wise person learns from the mistakes of the smart person.
So be wise.
Yes.
Well, that's okay. Why I'm calling, I guess.
All right, so. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much, guys. Talk to you guys again. Thank you.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And speaking of free enterprise and all that associated stuff, you are listening also to KTEM, which is a Town Square Media radio station that sells time, which is pretty interesting to think about it. And so we've got to deliver some of that time to the advertisers, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. The telephone numbers in here remain unchanged. 773-1400 if you're in East Bell County, or
1-866-597-1400 anywhere else within the sound of our voices. Something happened this week. Isn't that amazing?
The Earth,
that's the news. Something happened.
The Earth rotated 7 times.
Yes.
Okay.
We
exactly.
The Supreme Court ruled on the Affordable Care Act and said that the Affordable Care Act may have stated in it that that you needed a state-run exchange, but that they could take the definition of state and apply it to the federal government.
Well,
that it is a state.
Well, there's another place in there where it also says such exchanges shall be, and when it said such exchanges, the such referred to all exchanges, including those set up by the federal government.
Right. So, there have been a lot of conservatives that are really upset by this, and you made an analogy during the break that said that you thought that this was amazing because if the folks that had been trying to get this to fail, it'd be like the dog catching the car.
Yeah, it
it's not pretty.
There's 16.7 million people, conservatively, who are now insured under the Affordable Care Act, who, if it were repealed, would instantly lose their health insurance.
Right. And here's the bigger issue. If the Supreme Court were to rule it unconstitutional,
mm-hmm,
it would have to be retroactive. And that's a big,
man,
big problem, because the insurance companies would have to cancel insurance before the payments that have already been made to the hospitals. So who owes what,
yeah,
to whom, where, when, and why would be completely up in it would cause a disaster. It's like,
yeah,
it's like
the term that was used by I don't remember, one of the big health networks, one of the executives used the term, it would be a death spiral that would see hospitals, insurance companies, and health maintenance organizations all over the country declaring bankruptcy and shutting down.
Right. It's basically Obamacare, like it or not, was a, well, I'm going to use an analogy, it was a ship. There's a big ship. It was being put together. It was put together without the input of one group of engineers, one really large group of engineers that were really upset, and they said, we don't like that ship. You're doing it wrong. But the ship got made. It got put in the water.
Mm-hmm.
People got on board.
And we're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes, it's now
in the wintertime.
It's now underway in the Atlantic in wintertime. And this test was to see whether or not we remove all the rivets right now. That wouldn't have worked. If you want to repeal parts of it, if you want to repeal all of it, if you want to go through and replace it with other things, there's ways that it can be fixed and made better. But trying to sink it would just drown everybody on board.
There is a provision in the Affordable Care Act that a state or states can set up a different program altogether.
Correct.
As long as it does not increase the federal deficit and provides substantially the same level of care.
Right. Each state has the opportunity.
In 2017. So if let's just say Texas, we in Texas have concluded we don't like the Affordable Care Act collectively. Okay.
So let's make something else.
We have the right to set up a completely different system. Now, here's the point. Nobody to date, I looked hard. No state that has rejected the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare,
mm-hmm.
There's not even a conceptual plan of how to produce a system that will get the job done.
This is a failure on the conservative side because they've allowed the liberals to take health care under their wing and make it a liberal thing. Ronald Reagan was one of the first presidents, but he wasn't the first president to talk about insurance reform program to allow everybody to get insurance. Richard Nixon was the first. So we've got two staunch conservatives. Ronald Reagan is almost sainthood in most conservatives' minds.
Saint Ronald of Reagan.
Saint Ronald of Reagan.
Yes.
Yes. And yet, because this law was labeled Obamacare by the conservatives, any kind of support for a healthcare system that has some kind of governmental involvement at all is somehow a death knell to the election, and that doesn't make sense. It really doesn't make sense. They've allowed the liberals to take over a thing and run with it, and the only options that are coming on the table on the conservative side is just get rid of it completely.
And then,
that won't work anymore.
No, it is. If somehow, whatever conservative, who was the first guy to run to declare for the Republican nomination officially? I can't remember his name.
For
senator.
President?
He's our senator, and I can't remember his name. That's just bad. I'm drawing
Ted Cruz.
A blank. Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz wants to repeal it as president, and he stated that on several occasions.
Well, he doesn't get the ability to. He can't veto something that's already passed.
That's what I said. Some of this stuff is idiocy. But the point is that let's just say that we got a president elected who is a Republican, a staunch conservative Republican. Ted Cruz gets elected, and the Tea Partyists take over the House and the Senate, and the first action they do is to repeal Obamacare.
We're back in recession.
We would basically lose health care from one end of the country to the other as hospitals shut down.
Insurance companies would go under.
Insurance companies shut down, and we would be – and the point is, I think any member of Congress – well, I don't know. There are probably at least one
– two
senators who probably don't know this. But the point is, any thinking person who looks at the ramifications of taking that action – realizes it would be a total disaster, and whoever voted for it would lose their job shortly thereafter.
Right. And I've gotten people respond to that sort
mm-hmm,
of thing to
yeah.
me. They come back to me and they say, "You're overdoing this. There's no way it would cause this kind of disaster."
Oh, it would.
Wait, and then they say, "Well, we didn't have it before, and we didn't have that disaster before." And my response is, You're absolutely right. We didn't have it before, and we didn't have the disaster. We
mm-hmm.
had a bad
mm-hmm.
situation. It needed work. Conservatives were saying it the same way liberals were. The difference is that now it's part of the structure. We have given mandates to insurance companies and to hospitals and to doctors all over the country. They must change their practices. They must change their business to allow for this. And they had to incorporate all kinds of new practices. And the revenue stream has changed. If you change it again without the same kind of workup, the same kind of time requirement to change it back, you have a disaster. It's like you need If you're stopping your car with your brakes, it may take you several hundred feet to stop. If you're stopping your car with a light pole, you stop it really fast. One is a lot better for the car.
There's another thing that I think a lot of people have forgotten, and that is that prior to the passing of the Affordable Care Act, and that's its name. I know a lot of people want to call it Obamacare. Let's just call it the Affordable Care Act. Let's not give Obama any more credit than he earned. Medicare was forecast by the trustees to be bankrupt in 2018. And that was before. Now, this is important to note here. This was before the 2008-2009 recession and the money flows to Medicare dropping as much as they did. If the Affordable Care Act were repealed today, Medicare would go bankrupt this year. Let me say that again. If it were repealed and retroactively appealed, if it were repealed retroactively, Medicare would be bankrupt officially this year. If they just stopped it now, if somehow we could just stop Obamacare today and do away with the tax increase that is part of Obamacare on the Medicare tax so that people who earn a lot of money, and people who earn a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, are paying the Medicare tax now. They weren't before. And they're also paying it on investment income now, which they weren't before. If you remove that element, Medicare is gone in a very short period of time under every scenario that you can come up with, which means that the same Congress...
And with the current situation, it looks to be solvent through 2030.
Mm-hmm. That solvency is 15 years. Based on the Affordable Care Act.
Right. And any tweak to that is going to change it.
The Congress that abolishes the Affordable Care Act is going to have to institute immediately a very large increase in the Medicare tax, and it will have to include investment income, or Medicare goes away. And let me tell you, the last thing in the world you want to do in if you're going to get reelected is take everybody who's 65 years of age and older and tell them, we're canceling your Medicare.
Let me step in here for just a second and say part of the reason why we think that Obamacare should not be called Obamacare. Inside the law, it says that the American, in the Affordable Care Act, it says $415 billion will be reduced in payments to care providers.
And they're getting
to Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
So Medicare's
they're getting there too, by the way.
Reducing payments. This is something that every conservative has been calling for decades. They've been saying it, but they wouldn't be ever able to get it passed because you're telling people that you're reducing Medicare. And this it happened in the Affordable Care Act.
And the funny thing is, and there's an irony here, this is going to be with us from now to eternity.
Yes, it's almost impossible to cancel it now.
Social Security is not called Roosevelt Care.
No. Let's not call this Obamacare forever.
And Medicare and Medicaid is not called Lyndon Johnson Care.
No.
And
you're just creating a sainthood for the president.
You are. You're memorializing President Obama by calling it Obamacare, because this thing is going to be with us as long as there is a republic. And by sticking President Obama's name on it, who, by the way, had next to nothing to do with its construction or passing.
Yeah, if you read, if you go back and read the transcripts,
you could call it Pelosi Care.
Yeah, watch the debates between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. They're all available. You can go back and watch them. You will find that when they debated health care, this is much more Hillary's version of the plan than it is Obama's mm-hmm. version of the plan. Obama said he predicted most of the constitutional challenges. He said you can't do an individual mandate because then you'd have to redefine the tax code. And we're not planning on doing that.
But the fact is...
But Pelosi did it.
It's with us. It's going to stay with us. And I had a couple of people comment about how upset they were about the same-sex marriage decision. Well, that's a fairly simple thing. We have a Civil Rights Act.
Yeah.
And the Civil Rights Act forbids discrimination by sex under the law.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's already in the law. It's,
and
sex,
all, if Congress doesn't like it, I mean, the
they can change the law.
The Defense of Marriage Act was overturned by the Supreme Court because it's a violation of the Civil Rights Act.
Yeah, and the Civil Rights Act
so,
is under the Constitution, must be applied equally.
Right.
If you're discriminating by sex at a workplace, I can't hire you because you're female. Mm-hmm.
But
can't do that.
But
then
the
you
government
can't
also cannot discriminate. All,
right.
all Congress has to do is repeal the Civil Rights Act or amend it or amend the Constitution.
Right.
And the point is,
people act like this is a permanent thing. You could change it if you really wanted. If you had the support to do it, it could be changed.
The fact is that if you do polls, you'll see why they're not interested in doing that.
Because it would never pass.
About 68% of Americans right now appear to support same-sex marriage. So we're in a democracy. Guess what?
It's a republic democracy. It is a republic.
Mm-hmm.
But in this particular case,
you're never going to get people to vote to turn down something they like.
Right.
And
the people that are in the legislature will not get reelected if they go against 68% of the population.
And, well, you're never going to get the states to approve it or anything else. But this is the point that I want to make here. These things are realities. And I happen to be, unabashedly, a Republican. Been a Republican for all of my adult life.
I'm unabashedly completely independent. I'm not even registered as independent.
I
vote, but I don't vote in any primary.
I believe that we should have a republic, not a democracy.
I agree with that, but that's not necessarily what Republican means anymore.
But my point is, and this is 2 cents worth for anybody who wants to think about this for a while. We, as Republicans, either nominate somebody who can carry the middle and who sincerely has thought about it and is not a panderer. And by the way, I hate to say this, but the last two Republican nominees were panderers. And that person, I'll just come right out and say, the guy named Bush from Florida is the guy who's thought about it. And if you read his policy positions and everything else, you'll probably find very little to object there.
Sounds like you're endorsing somebody already.
I'm pretty close to it. I just look at the field that's running out there, and very frankly, and this is in the Financial Times today, it's pretty clearly going to be, and I would be, first off, Hillary Clinton is going to get the nomination. She's practically got it wrapped up. Everybody who is attempting to get the Democratic nomination is a fringe person other than Hillary. She's got it. So one side is going to be Hillary Clinton. I've talked to conservative friends of mine who have said if Jeb is nominated, they are just not going to vote for him.
Then they're electing Hillary Clinton.
So what the Republican Party and the core of the conservative Republicans is in this area, and maybe you can get the word out. If the core conservative Republicans choose not to support a Republican who can win the middle, they are electing Hillary Clinton as president of the United States.
Very similar to the way that Barack Obama was elected by mm-hmm. Rush Limbaugh when
yep.
he said, don't let Hillary be president. Vote for Barack Obama in the primaries, even if you're a Republican.
And we have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Caller?
Hello.
Hello? Well,
maybe.
I guess we don't have a caller. Caller?
So, caller, you're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Are you there? I don't even hear anything on the.
Yeah, let's move on.
I'm going to put it on hold.
I'm
going to come back to the caller. Caller on 773-1400, you're on the air.
Nope. Let's just go on.
Okay.
All right. The GDP growth for the first quarter, something that.
That might have been it.
Yeah,
yes,
you had
okay.
the phone off the hook.
That'll do it.
The GDP for the first quarter first came out as a growth of 0.2% and then was revised to a shrinkage, or as I like to call it, a shrinkle of negative 0.7%. It has now been revised again.
To a negative 0.2.
To a negative 0.2%.
And it will be revised yet one more time.
Yes, at least one more time. There's possibility of two more revisions, which it's so much fun because the headlines are all for the first or the second But
and Gene Epstein is predicting a 3.5% growth this year.
And I think that's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with one of the biggest issues in the first quarter, that actually if we're at a 0.2% drop, the biggest negative aspect of our GDP for the first quarter was international trade. We had a stock workers union strike issue in the West Coast.
Longshoremen.
The longshoremen, yes. I'm
As opposed to the shortshoremen.
No, the shortshoremen were still working.
Right.
The longshoremen were not.
Right.
So while that was going on, we had a big hit to the economy. We had a big snowstorm on the East Coast. That also had a big hit to the international
trade.
So
basically we had the East and West Coast shut down.
Right. So we weren't doing things at the places that we have ships. And for some reason, our shipping lost money.
Mm.
So what we're looking at now, and it's quite possible that the next revision will put it right at, I think 0.2% is right at zero. We don't know. If you're going to revise from positive 0.2 to negative 0.7 to negative 0.2, it's zero. There was no appreciable difference in our economy in the first quarter. And that was with us bearing the burden of a lot of bad weather and a lot of issues on the West Coast with trade, and the price of oil dropping drastically and the dollar rising drastically. You throw that all together and people didn't want to buy from us because it got more expensive because the dollar was stronger. And the price of oil dropped, so all of the people that were drilling for oil and thinking that they were going to make lots and lots of money stopped making lots and lots of money. Well, when we're about out of time, I was going on my soliloquy here.
And
if you'd like to contact us off the air, you can contact us.
About a sudden change.
Yes, locally at
947-1111. We got that number so I could remember it.
Yes, you can reach us toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
Or you can contact us at Jeff at TPWC or...
Jake at TPWC. Both of those are .coms.
.coms, yes. They're
yes, not, or Jim. You can go to the webpage, The Personal Wealth Coach, or TPWC.com. And listen to podcasts, look at our ugly mugs, read about our philosophy, and see the picture of our office. So until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.